Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show. Manhattan Beach 360. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and you're listening live to a presentation online from the Manhattan Beach Studios at the Manhattan Beach Chamber. Thank you for joining us. We're going to be live in just one moment.
The South Bay Show is brought to you by the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce. The Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce has been serving the city of Manhattan Beach for over 60 years, and they are dedicated to promoting a strong local economy by supporting the community, providing valuable business connections, and representing business with government. The Chamber staff is focused on providing its membership with the tools and resources to help businesses grow and thrive within the community. Their goal is to continually support the individual efforts of business as they work to support the growth of the local economy. For more information on how the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce is working with member businesses and the City of Manhattan Beach to support that growth, visit the website at manhattanbeachchamber.com or call 310-545-5313.
It's Friday, June 29th, 2018. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that. Again, I'm your host, Joe Terry, and you can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/ The South Bay Show. Passion, principle, and purpose. That's what we talk about here on the South Bay Show. And joining us today as co-host and co-producer, president and CEO of the Manhattan Beach Chamber, Mr. Mark Lips. And of course, with us because of our great partnership with South Bay by Jackie.com and executive producer of the South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, Mark, how are you guys doing today?
Doing okay. It's Friday.
I'm doing great, and it is Friday, and that's why I'm doing great. Not that my week doesn't stop. That's for sure. Saturday and Sunday, there's always somebody who wants to talk about something that has to do with chamber business.
Right.
Speaking of chamber business. A quick little housework here. We are making a slight change to the name of the show. And it's always been known as Manhattan Beach 360, but we are adding the chamber to that. So we're going to be calling it Manhattan Beach Chamber 360 from now
MB
on.
I need the branding.
Is it MB or Manhattan?
It just seems like MB Chamber rolls off the tongue a little bit more, but you know, you call it whatever you want there, Joe. You're okay. So, hey, listen, I went to, I've always been one of those, and Dana will probably, when she comes on, this maybe isn't a good thing to say in front of her, but. I've always been one of those guys. I never really wanted to be that guy that had the electric bike, you know, to have that electric bike. Because I also think that you should pedal under your own power. It's exercise. You do it until you die. If you can't do it anymore, then you should die or something like that. But anyway, I went to the South Bay Cog, had a group electric bike and scooter representatives at their facility yesterday afternoon. And so a lot of the city officials, a lot of us were all invited to go and try these bikes out and try these different bike share programs that they're trying to get cities to adopt. And so they had scooters and bikes and all kinds of different companies too. So, you know, some bikes were better than other bikes. And one company was offering a deal where they will rebate back to the city a portion of the monies made from the bike share program, things like that. So they were pushing all those kinds of initiatives and wanting to get involved with all the different beach cities and stuff like that. So Beach Cities Health District was there as well, Tom Backley and all that. But I got to tell you, man, I got on this one battery bike, this one electric bike, and the more you pedal, the faster you go. And I was zooming around that parking lot. It was like being on a motorcycle. I loved it. And if I could find a bike like that, you know, I'm not sure I would get any exercise, but no hill would stop me. I would just zoom up those hills. I mean, it was really – and by the way, the interesting thing is you cannot – because of, like, that bike in particular. Now, they had another one that you pedaled, and it just gave you a little hint of extra power. So – you still were having to really kind of pedal if you're going up a hill, but it just gave you just a bit of a little extra power as you pedal more. But this bike, man, you pedaled a little bit more, and it, like, exponentially doubled what you were doing, you know, with your pedaling normally.
What was it called?
Bird.
Bird.
Oh, no, wait. That was the – yeah, that was the bike, I think. It was Bird. B-I-R-D, I believe. But anyway, and some of them had it's interesting. You would think that a company would have both bikes and scooters, but they were either a scooter or a bike. And the interesting thing is, though, you know, those bikes, you cannot, and most cities have laws against that, those are all street bikes. You cannot take those on the Strand or bike highway or anything like that, because it's a motorized bike. And so, you know, you're cheating. So, I tell you, I wouldn't mind having one of those things. I would probably get one, and, you know, when I can, because I think they've got to be like $1,000 to $1,500, something like that. And, I might, if I had a bike like that, I wouldn't be breaking into a sweat, and I could actually show up at members' offices and stores and all of that and not have to drive my car and not be
correct
sweaty and you know, all of that. I mean, that thing, geez, it's correct. Like having a little motorcycle.
Joe, should we let him in on it? Are we going to let him in on it, Joe?
What, you got one?
We've been doing electric bike for years.
I've had
both
an electric
of you?
Bike for – no, I've had an electric
I
bike
I thought
for,
you had that cute little beach cruiser.
It is. It's the Raspberry Express. It's adorable, but it's
but
electric.
It's electric?
Yes, it's an electric bike. I have a Pedego. I think I've had it. Have I had it 3 or 4 years? And I have to tell you, it changed my life. It changed my life.
Yeah. If you have a Pedego, you should have a doctor look at that. So
no, seriously. I'm serious, Mark. Anything that I have to go to, whether it's a business meeting or an event, if it's west of PCH, I am on my bike. I rode it up to Hermosa Beach the other day. I had a meeting up in Hermosa Beach. I rode it up. I ride it in dresses and heels. You don't sweat. You don't have to sweat.
Well, in all seriousness, I really, if I could get the one bike that had that kind of power that it had, Bird. If I had something like that, I'm assuming I could buy one of those, right? I mean, you don't have to do a bike share.
Yes.
So you just buy one. And, I would ride that to work. I would ride that to offices, and I wouldn't even break a sweat. Now, I don't know. Maybe I'm getting vitamin D just by being out exposed. I could look at it positively like that. But I do like the idea that you have to pedal, you know? And
well, here's the thing.
I think
thing.
I'm going to get trapped into always riding that bike. You know?
No, here's the thing. Here's the thing, Mark. There are several different types out there, but what I do is I pedal the whole time. I pedal the whole time, and I only use the throttle when I'm going up a hill or when I have to catch up with my husband because he rides a lot faster than me.
This bike that I'm talking about doesn't have a throttle.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. The more you pedal,
right.
It zooms. And so, you know... If you're trying to get a workout, you're going, damn, I can't, there's no, John, slow down. I want to work out a little bit here, you know.
No, well,
but I'm sure, but I just buy a bike that fits my lifestyle like that, you know, where you have the throttle. That's a good idea.
Yeah. It really does work. And the thing is that they're very heavy. Those bikes are very heavy, so you do get a workout. If you don't even have to have it on. You know, mine has a little button. You can turn it on and off at will. So if you're just pedaling without using it, you are getting a workout because the bike is so much heavier than the other.
How long does your battery last?
I got to tell you something. I have yet to run out yet. I've ridden as far as Marina Del Rey and back. And on my bike, there are three lights on it. There's a green, a yellow, and a red. And green is a full charge. When you get to yellow, it means that, you know, you're losing some charge. And then when you get down to red, I guess, you know, you have no charge. I've never been there. I've never gotten there.
Okay. Does your battery have a memory?
No.
That at all? If you haven't run
not
out, then
all.
You haven't noticed it yet.
Well, it hasn't made dinner reservations for me yet either, so I'm not sure what it can do yet. You know, I don't know what it could possibly
do. But
do
you plug it in? So you just plug it in?
Yes. If I'm just taking it, like I live in South Redondo, so if I'm just going from Redondo to Manhattan or Hermosa, I don't bother. That's too short. But like if I go on a ride up to Playa del Rey or Marina del Rey, when I get home, I'll charge it. But I'll take it out for short hops several times a week and not charge it. I'm all about the electric bike. I mean, they're fantastic. Between that and Uber, I barely drive my car anymore. So
right. Well, yeah. I don't know why. That's another story. I don't know why a kid even buys a car anymore. Why have that payment? Why have that car payment when, rent a car when you want to go up to wherever and do whatever. But, kids are still boys, especially boys.
So,
boys are still boys. You want to own a car, so.
Yeah.
Well, let me see, Mark. If you can't pedal a bike, maybe you should die. And the car industry, you say people shouldn't buy cars anymore. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Hey, I will tell you. Way to distill it down, Joe. That's very good. And actually, unfortunately, it's probably accurate. But and think about it. If you can't pedal a car, I don't want you to pedal a bike. I'm not sure I want you driving either. It's interesting, the car industry, I've talked to the car industry, Brad Sperbert, Toyota, the guy that runs Longo, Brendan Harrigan, all those guys don't think they will be in the car selling business in 10, 15 years.
Right.
They will be in the car service business, which is the business they're in now. They don't make money off of selling cars. They make money off of servicing cars. Based on what those dealerships charge, they make a lot of money off of servicing those cars. So they're already planning for that. They're not going to be selling cars.
All right. Well, this is a nice segue into our topic today.
It is, because and I can just put the cap on it, is that life is about sustainability. Life is about not just what we do here for us, ourselves, but the future. Sustaining the environment for future generations, or what did the Iroquois Indians say? The seventh generation. They make every decision based on what seven generations in the future need and want, and that's what you're going to talk about today.
All my Iroquois friends say that.
I know, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean,
yes.
I'm having lunch with the Iroquois today, and they talk about it. Seven generations.
They talk about it all the time. They never shut up about it.
Where do you get these things? When was the last time you were hanging with the Iroquois, Joe?
Well, I can't hang with them. They drink too hard. I just can't deal with that. But I'll tell you, the thing is this. We have a guest with us that has devoted her life to really sustainability and our oceans and then has brought that to our local community and joined our community. And it's fantastic. Jackie, who's our guest today?
We'll see if she agrees with the Iroquois. Our guest this morning is Dana Murray, a marine scientist and the environmental manager for the city of Manhattan Beach. Now, Dana crafts environmental sustainability policies and programs for the city, including climate resiliency, coastal adaptation, planning for sea level rise, reducing plastic pollution, smart water management, and climate change mitigation. Now, formerly, Dana was the senior coastal policy manager at Heal the Bay, where she worked on science and policy issues related to coastal habitats and marine wildlife in California. She developed Los Angeles's MPA Watch Citizen Science Monitoring Program, assessing how people use LA's underwater parks. Completing hundreds of scientific dives underwater, she has been a research diver for Reef Check since 2003. Dana earned her master's degree in environmental science and management from UC Santa Barbara, specializing in conservation planning and coastal marine resource management, and her bachelor's in geography and environmental studies from UCLA. She was previously a Peace Corps volunteer, a conservation science researcher for the World Wildlife Fund, and the director of education at the California Wildlife Center. Dana enjoys volunteering, leading Girl Scouts, traveling, coaching youth soccer, and scuba diving around the world, and can be found locally sailing along the coast, diving in kelp forests, or playing on the beach with her young daughters. So as we mentioned this morning, we're going to learn about the beach. Welcome to the program, Dana. We're so glad you could join us this morning.
Oh, my gosh. I want to be Dana.
Good morning, you guys. Thanks for having me.
Good morning.
Thank you. It goes without saying, Dana, that, you know, that is that word, sustainability, is both a badge of honor and a rallying cry for different, you know, movements around the world today, whether it be, reduction in the number of species or the water or the air or the cleaning up the land. It's just something that is very much in the consciousness around the world today. So can you describe, though, what it means for us here in Southern California, in Manhattan Beach, California, as citizens of Manhattan Beach? What are some of the things that we need to think about and worry about in terms of sustainability?
Well, I think, you know, many of us, we choose to live in California, a big reason because we love the climate. We love the beaches, the mountains. You know, we're very lucky to live here. I'm a lifelong born and raised in Southern California. And I think especially when we're raising our families here, you know, we want to make sure that we have clean air to breathe, clean water to drink, you know, and just healthy place to raise our families and our children. And so to go back to what you guys were saying about seventh generation, that's absolutely, I mean, in my mind, it's how all of us should be thinking. You know, we're thinking like what kind of legacy will we be leaving behind for not just our children and grandchildren, but the rest of humanity. You know, are we taking better care of what we've inherited than the generations before us? You know, the more we know, the better we can do. And the great thing about working for the City of Manhattan Beach, and I also live in Redondo, is that I feel like regardless of what people's political affiliations are, caring about the environment and wanting a healthy community and environment is a bipartisan issue that benefits us all. So working in Manhattan Beach in the South Bay, it's great because it's, you know, people share the same vision. You know, we want to live in this same healthy world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, I agree.
I have a quick question, Joe, for Dana. Dana, do all cities have an environmental manager? Is that a common position within a city?
That's a good question. The answer is no. But also, some cities have many staff that work on environmental sustainability. So the research does show that if a city wants to make a lot of progress in sustainability and resilience and building a healthier community, hiring dedicated staffers that do just that will push it further. So, for instance, the city of Santa Monica has over 17 staffers that work on environmental issues there.
Wow.
The city of Malibu, which has about 80 city staff, four of them are environmental staffers.
So,
Manhattan Beach, we have me. Hermosa, I believe, has two. And Redondo, I think I work with a variety of staffers there, so I don't know if they have one dedicated person. So it is something that for residents in different cities, especially in the South Bay, it's something to ask your, you know, your city council and your local government if it's something of value to you. Because I definitely see, you know, cities in California and the country that are emerging as environmental leaders, especially in sustainability. It's because they've invested in it with staffing.
Interesting. You mentioned all those cities you mentioned are coastal adjacent. You know, they're on the coast. I was just wondering if something, you know, like Lawndale or Carson or, you know, if they have environmental staff. That's interesting. This is new to me.
You know, I do work with staffers in Hawthorne and Carson, especially in this Clean Power Alliance. We can go into that a little bit further, but it's this group across LA and Ventura County that over 30 local jurisdictions belong to. And Hawthorne and Carson both have staffers that work on it's basically bringing clean, renewable energy to our cities, to our communities.
Wow.
And so there's staffers that definitely work on environmental issues, but I'm not sure if they have, like, staff that's dedicated just doing that.
All right. All right. See, learn something over there.
Even though, you know, I was joking about the Iroquois, sort of, but the I do agree with that, too, because if we don't deal – I mean, we learn this all the time. We've learned it for decades, that if we don't deal with something now and think, you know, 30 years down the road, 40 years down the road, especially with GMO and stuff like that that we've discovered you know, we're gonna leave a legacy that's not a good legacy. You know, like it came out in the LA Times, yesterday that you know, our cliffs, our Southern California, are gonna, they feel by the year 2100 they're gonna recede by 130 feet or so, and you know, that's stuff you need to be thinking about now, especially as it relates to. We're getting more dense, more building, more development, all of those things. So you're right. I mean, 2100, of course, we're thinking, oh, well, that's 82 years from now. I'll, you know, I might make it. But the that's the legacy that we'll be leaving our grandkids. So we have to be careful.
And
I want my grandkids to think nice of me. I don't want them to go, oh, what did this guy just do? Who were these people?
It's true. You know, I'm the parent of two young children, and kids get it early on, and it's one of those things that, you know, the more they see us demonstrate it in our daily choices and our daily life, I think the more pride they have in their parents and grandparents. And you know, it's when I used to be work in more like environmental education, and I'd go into schools, it was so easy to just kind of tee up things, and kids knew exactly where to take it. Like, what actions can they do? Here's a problem. What actions can they do to make it better? Kids would know immediately. When you're speaking with adults, it's a mixture. So it's interesting that, you know, the youth really seems to understand this and get this. And it does give me a lot of hope for the future, because I think this is more on the forefront of people's minds, both adults and kids.
Well, I think over the thing is, like Joe was saying, you know, sustainability has become a worldwide initiative, and some more so than others. You know, I mean, we've been in Europe has been labeling things GMO for years, and you know, we're still struggling with that. But think about, and Dana, you're way too young for this, and Joe probably is too, and I think Jackie too. All of you guys are way too young.
I love when you say that.
I remember in the 60s when you thought nothing about tossing a bag of trash out your car on the side of the highway. Okay. So it's a lifestyle change. And then the litter programs that started in the 70s and, you know, don't litter, all of that, that was a big campaign. It took years. And now you see someone throw something out of a car, that sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, but I'm telling you. It was the Indian, remember? The Indian standing by the side of the road with
a tear.
Crying.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I think what's happening, which is a good thing, is that we've just got this lifestyle that that's beginning to permeate everything we do. Our kids are growing up with it, so they expect it. Like our kids, if you told them, and it's hard for me to even believe that you could smoke on an airplane when I was, you know, years ago.
Yeah.
When I think about, the no smoking section's here and the smoking section's up there, you're going, what are you talking about? It's all coming out here. You know? But that was – and our kids, that's so foreign to them. And so it's a lifestyle. And we're really – that's the good news is we're developing that lifestyle change. And they'll – you know, at some point, you know, the, at some point, you know, they won't. They'll think, "Why would I want a straw? You know, I can drink right from the glass."
So, Mark,
it's crazy to have a straw.
Mark, what are some of the challenges for sustainability and environment that we deal with here in Manhattan Beach?
Are you asking Dana?
Yeah, I was gonna say, you're asking Mark. Yes, Dana.
I'm asking you to ask her, Mark. Ask her, Mark. You're
okay. Joe, hold on. Excuse me, Dana. Are you still on? We're trying to be on the. Okay, here's a sensitive question. Where do we rank in terms of all the other beach cities? Are we behind? Are we in front? Are we pacing right along? Are we leaders, or do we need to play catch up? We were down an environmental person for a year, right? And then we brought you on. Huge experience. We all want to live your life. I want to go dive and do all those things you do. I'd rather coach baseball
hundreds
than soccer, though, by the way. But anyway.
If not thousands.
Hundreds of dives. Where do we stand? Where is the Manhattan Beach fit?
Oh, you guys want to be competitive, huh?
Because I want to think that we're progressive and we're not following, you know.
Well, it depends on the issue. The City of Manhattan Beach is a leader in many issues, in not just the South Bay, but in the state, in the country. Something like reducing plastic pollution. We're one of the very first cities to pass a single-use plastic bag ban back in 2008. San Francisco and Malibu were the others that were right neck and neck with us getting one passed. And then after that, hundreds of other cities passed their own local ordinances, and then the state did. So it is something – and then, again, with polystyrene, otherwise known as styrofoam, in 2013 and 2014, our city addressed getting rid of most of the polystyrene in our community because it's very – if you can't recycle it, it's very damaging to marine wildlife. It blows away and gets in the environment very easily, so it doesn't even make it to landfill. But it also won't ever biodegrade.
Right.
So our city addressed that. And again, like over 100 cities since us have passed polystyrene bans as well. So the new thing that our city did on plastic pollution, as of June 5th, we have now addressed further single-use plastic items. So single-use plastic straws, stirrers, and utensils. And we also, our council also banned polystyrene egg cartons. You know, there's viable alternatives. We don't need to be using, like, the most damaging product. But then there's other other areas where our city, you know, we need to make more progress. So areas of, like, we were talking about, you know, cliffs eroding and stuff. So that's called doing a sea level rise vulnerability assessment and a climate adaptation plan. And so Hermosa Beach and Santa Monica, they're already several years into doing that for their cities. And our council just approved us to start embarking on that this summer and fall. So our city will be doing that right now, and that's good for the community and people, for our coastal infrastructure, and for the environment, because it'll help us figure out, and not to 2100, because that's pretty extreme, Mark, when you look that far out. I mean, it also could just take one earthquake locally, and we could get 100 years of sea level rise immediately. So we're doing this sea level rise planning. We're looking at, you know, when we have those big storms, and you couple that with king tides and those really high tides, and you add a few inches of sea level rise, what does our coast look like then? And how can we best build a resilient coast that can withstand a rising sea?
Mm-hmm. The thing
I know you guys are keeping it light, and I keep making it heavy.
I know. No. I love it.
No,
I love it
because
I am heavy. I have. Listen, you're preaching to the choir, but
you're
Joe is Michael Green and water from air. Solar power and, no sprinkler system, drought-tolerant landscaping,
awesome.
You know, all of those things, and now soon maybe an electric bike. But the thing I worry about sometimes is I worry that cities sometimes jump on the bandwagon but don't follow through. In other words, they can it's on paper, but are they really enforcing? Are they really passionate about making it a reality and a lifestyle change? Like, people talk about the no smoking all the time. People are still smoking in Manhattan Beach. Are we enforcing that? You know, things like that.
Go ahead. Dana. Yeah, I was just going to add on to that. Wasn't it January 1st there was a law passed about the plastic straws?
That doesn't happen until 2019, though. I don't think,
yeah, it'll
right?
it'll go into a it'll be enforced January 1st, 2019.
January 1st. Okay, yeah. I thought that it went into effect January 1st, and so help me God, ever since then, when I sit down at a counter at a restaurant or whatever, and they hand me a straw, I push it back. I'm already pushing it back. I'm like, no, I don't need that. You know, and I'm thinking, why are they giving this to me? It's illegal, but I'm wrong. It doesn't go into effect for another year. But it was top of mind. You know,
A lot of them are going to use up their current stock before they, you know.
And then on the flip side, a lot of businesses already adopted it. Before our city even started entertaining a policy, businesses were already adopting this up and down our coast. I was just at a summit with, it's called the California Green Cities, or Green Cities California, and we met up in the Bay Area earlier this week, and it was one of the things that we had definitely, Manhattan Beach, but along with Malibu, Seattle, San Francisco, were leaders in plastic pollution, and so I had all these other cities from California, they're immediately asking for, what's your policy language? You know, what kind of outreach did you do? They wanted to know the template because this is kind of a cresting wave, and we're staying ahead of it. We're getting tubed. We're not quite back in the whitewater, which is great. And I've been on the phone with McDonald's, and Starbucks. Oh yeah,
Dana.
I used to surf a lot more. My husband's
surf?
A surfer.
What? Oh my God.
Well, each kid you add to your family, like it whittles away a little bit of your free time to do things like that.
What's Starbucks doing?
So I was on the phone with Starbucks and McDonald's in the past month because Starbucks and McDonald's are the two biggest contributors to straws in the community and the environment. So, when you have these ordinances, actually there's a lot of local businesses that voluntarily adopt the practices before the policy even goes into effect, but the larger businesses who stand to make even a greater difference, they're weighing, their larger kind of product procurement. And so I was on the phone with Starbucks sustainability manager up in Seattle and talking about, because he sees the writing on the wall. McDonald's sees it too, because there are hundreds of cities and many countries around the world that are, especially with plastic straws, addressing them right now, getting rid of them. And so what it's doing, it's kind of forcing the market to change a bit. And so it's one of those things, are plastic straws the biggest threat to the environment? No. Is it a problem? Yes. And it's data-driven. So you're looking at at Coastal Cleanup Day, the data that everybody kind of records on cards, what are the top 10 types of litter that people pick up? And those are the ones usually that you want to try to stop at the source. So where is it coming from? Who's producing it? Are there alternatives? And that's where you kind of address it.
I think I think anything you chip away at plastic is good. And you just have to keep chipping away at it. And straws are one thing. When I have businesses, when I talk to businesses about it and they go, it's probably going to cost us more for paper. Or I said, first of all, I wouldn't even offer a straw. Don't offer it. If someone asks for it, then give them the paper straw. But don't mm-hmm. offer it. I mean, we're only mm-hmm. – it's kind of like bottled water. We have only – this lifestyle of having a straw has been built into our culture over years. It's not something that we used to do. It used to be you got a glass of water and you drank out of the glass at a restaurant.
Right.
Now every glass of water comes with a straw. And
mm-hmm.
I think if unless someone's asking for it, see how far you can get that way. Now, what it has created unintended consequences the production of paper straws is we're having to ratchet that up. People are running out of paper straws.
Invest in companies that make paper straws and sell all the stocks of companies that make plastic straws.
Well, the other thing is, what I'd like to see initiatives on too, and I would like to see these Tupperware companies do it more, is start selling glass storage, focus on more glass storage than the plastic containers. I'd like to see more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Pyrex.
And actually, to your point, I think, you know, and the easy disposable option is going to like a fiber base, so like the paper straws or something. But really what we're looking for is a shift, and I think Mark was getting it where, you know, it's, you know, saying no straw, thank you, or, you know, straws upon request. So our policy in our city is paired with an upon request aspect. So even those that are disposable that are allowed, people have to request them to get them. So instead of getting your food delivered with a bunch of, you know, takeout utensils that just go into your drawer, you're home. You have all your utensils there.
Right.
You know, it's upon request. And I can't tell you how many people I've had ask me, they're like, what can I do with all these plastic utensils in my drawer? I have all these extras. And I have to say, you know, great question. You can't recycle them.
Yeah,
you know?
I have a whole drawer full of those things just in case I'm going to the beach or whatever, and I'm throwing them all out. I'm just getting rid of them, just saying, okay, that's it, none of that. Especially because, for instance, the city, you know, and it's right now it's, I think, Dana, it's considered sort of a novelty, but at some point we will be where we carry around that little pouch that you give out of a knife, a fork, and a spoon.
Well, and that's where I think,
and a chopstick.
It's like what's old is new, so it's
right.
Getting rid of kind of like the convenient disposable part of our lives and thinking more, you know. And you guys were saying how you know, in the 60s, people might throw trash out the window. And when I've lived in other countries, like in the Peace Corps, you know, that still happens in other places, too. But it's one of those things, you know better, you know more and you do better.
Right.
But there's also things that, you know, we did in the 60s, 50s, and before that were a lot more sustainable, a lot more reusing. And so more than recycling, it's reducing and reusing is the more important thing to
right.
grasp here. So just like you were saying, Mark, you know,
mm-hmm.
not using straw, like, you know, reevaluating, like, do I need that plastic bag? Do I need that plastic straw? Or if you really do, like, I have little kids, they do drink from straws when we go out. I just bring a couple of reusable ones in my purse.
Right.
So thinking, mm-hmm. you know, it's a little more planning, but you have other bunch of other baby stuff you're bringing. Why not, you know, throw that in there too?
Right.
Well, I
you
think
know,
it's also
you know,
like the famous juice box that had the straw attached to the side of the juice box. Oh, it drives me crazy. And it comes wrapped in a piece of plastic. It is a piece
right,
of plastic
right.
attached to
yeah.
a piece of plastic. And
mm-hmm.
then you poke it through the piece of plastic and you drink out of it. Now, why couldn't you design a box that it opens up like the old milk cartons, you know, and you drink out of it
mm-hmm.
that way versus even using a straw?
Years ago, it was brought to my attention, or I read about it, that about the carbon footprint, what it takes to get bottled water into your house.
Oh, yeah.
This is your cue, Joe.
I was a kid
oh, yeah?
that grew up, you know, drinking out of the hose, you know, on the side of the house. So,
me too.
Many years ago, I decided I am not buying bottled water. We bought the filters. We have the pitchers, blah, 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 right? I won't even consider buying bottled water anymore. But this is interesting. About 6-8 months ago, I cook. I'm the person in charge of our food in my house, right? I started wondering what I could use to replace Ziploc bags, because I was going through Ziploc bags like nobody's business. And I have the Pyrex class glass dishes with the tops that you can store stuff in. But like I put everything in Ziplocs, between, you know, ants, you know, freshness. You know, if I'll buy vegetables at the supermarket, I'll come home and I'll cut them up. I'll use half a pepper, but I want to save the other half.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been thinking so hard about what I can use to, what I can do to not use Ziploc. And I have those reusable Tupperware things. And I'm doing that, you know, like say I use only half a tomato, you know, I'll put it in one of those, the leftovers in one of those little Tupperware things that I can reuse. But the Ziploc bags have got to be, gosh, I mean, everybody uses those. And I'm
Boy,
trying
that's
to figure
a good
out
point.
What did we do before those? I mean, what did we do to keep things fresh?
Mm-hmm.
Can anybody answer?
We put them in the cellar.
And I don't think we bought as much perishables at once either.
Right. Yeah.
But I think that's a good self-realization. Because and people always scrutinize, you know, how I live my life, and we're all human. And so there's always improvements that I am looking to make, just like you guys are. And so I think that's one of those things that, you know, Earth Month is in April, and that's a good time every year that people can kind of self-reflect on the daily choices that they make. And you've already made one right there. You know, you've made one with plastic water bottles. And I totally agree. Did you guys know that municipal water is more highly regulated than bottled water?
Yep.
Yeah, we've heard that.
But I do the same thing where I just put my water at home. I just put it through like a Brita filter and put it in the fridge.
Right.
And keep it cool that
right.
way.
Yeah, that's what I do. I fill up a jug.
We have room temperature water and we have refrigerated water and it's all filtered. Yes. But it's funny you guys brought this up because
we have this group called the Sustainability Task Force. It's made of about 10 community members. Two council members, so Mayor Howorth and Council Member Herzman, and about 10 city staffers. And we meet every month, and we're tackling some of the larger environmental issues in our community. But one of the things that's coming up is a lot of the members want to do more like eco-profiling in the South Bay and kind of highlight just everyday choices that some of our community members are making to live more of an eco-friendly or sustainable life. And so what you guys are saying are perfect examples of that, because I think sometimes environmental issues seem so large and there's so many people contributing to it, so it might seem overwhelming what one person can do, but the everyday choices that each of us make collectively amounts to a lot. So I think it's one of those things, the more we're talking about it, you know, if you throw a dinner party and you have, like, just reusable utensils. You know, you have, you know, drinks and jugs rather than, you know, single-use plastic bottles or something like that. You know, those are just small little talking points that I think might go a long way.
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking. I've got four different size Ziplocs in my kitchen drawer right now.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Four different size ones. Now what?
No, exactly. I hadn't even thought of. Oh, now I feel so guilty even having those things.
Now you'll be aware.
Right. But more Pyrex. We're just going to be covered with Pyrex.
Yeah.
But then I thought about the plastic tops for the Pyrex. I'm going, wait a second. You know, there's a plastic top.
Oh my gosh, those break down. Those break down. I order those every year. I have to order several of them because plastic. Look, I mean, you know, we all use those Rubbermaid bins, you know, for storage and stuff. And my husband has a big blue one out in the side yard that he keeps all of his pool supplies in and stuff.
Right.
And I'll tell you something, after about 6 or 8 months, those things, the color's gone, they're cracking, they're fading. You try to pick it up, it breaks into a million pieces. I mean, I'm totally getting rid of those. You know, I don't buy plastic trash cans. I've been buying galvanized trash cans, you know, for under the sink, for the backyard, because the other plastic, it just doesn't last.
Oh, my gosh, good idea.
It breaks down into a million little pieces. It never goes away, but it breaks down. Listen to us, like we're experts, and we got the expert on the line. Tell us about it, Dana.
Hey, so, Dana.
This is awesome to hear. No, I mean, this is just everyday conversations, and you find out a bunch of new things. But it made me think, you guys, on the plastic Ziplocs and kind of storage idea, there is something that a lot of people are using these days. It's beeswax wrap. Actually, Grades of Green, at their annual fundraiser, they had bees wrap that they gave out to everybody. And you kind of use it just like you would of saran wrap or tin foil or something, or even a bag, and you just wrap your food in it,
oh, okay.
your leftovers
so
or something.
Oh.
Yeah. So you're on. Right, right.
And then you just rinse
it. Oh, I have to get
when you're done, you just you rinse it and you dry it.
I have
you rinse
to get
the you reuse the beeswax?
Yeah, yeah. It's beeswax wrapped. Yeah.
The beeswax. Where do you get that?
Where do you get it?
Online,
of course.
I've had friends make it for gifts for friends. I've had received it at fundraisers like that. I think it's just one of those things. It's a newer
mainstream
idea.
I think that's a good project for
Jackie. Oh, thanks, Mark. Like, I don't have enough going on. Great.
That's interesting. I'd like to see that. I don't even know how you would make that. I mean, that's interesting.
Well, we don't have time to make it. We just want to buy it. We'll look that up after the show. We'll go
right.
We'll go
right,
online
right.
And we'll look that up. Because that could be the answer to all my issues. Yeah. I love that, Dana. I love that.
So, Dana, here's a question. And this goes back to the days of when we were converting from cloth diapers to disposable diapers. Which is better?
Oh, cloth.
Okay.
So what I did with my babies is I was the firstborn for my parents, and they lived in La Crescenta, Montrose at the time, and they had a diaper service that brought diapers. So I actually did that with my children because both my husband and I work. You know, we didn't have time to like wash our own cloth diapers and stuff, but I knew that the impact of disposable diapers is huge. And so I found an organic cloth diaper service that would drop off a bag of clean diapers every week and pick up your bag of dirties. And I cloth diapered my children for the first year and a half or so of their life.
Okay. And then years three through seven, you used disposable. Okay. The
seven.
So
just get used to it, Dana. That's smart.
Oh,
that's
I'm sorry. Smart. It was years 90 through 97. Okay. So now I'm using this to get to a point that what about the water used to clean the diapers? So are you trading one thing for another issue? In other words, now, because we used to say, okay, cloth diapers would be better. But then there came the naysayers out there who would say, yeah, but the water you're using to clean the diapers is now impacting the world. You know, I mean, you're using water that you.
Well, here's one. I mean, there's trade-off. People always say that, you know, when you have options. But I would say I try to make my decisions based on what's a renewable resource.
Mm-hmm.
And also what's going to biodegrade.
Right.
So the same argument goes, like, if you have to use a paper bag versus plastic. You know, they're like, oh, paper bag still has these big impacts in production, that this and that. And I said, well, the first thing would be, you know, I'll go reusable because then, you know, the impact that's made, it's worth it.
Right.
But if you have to choose, you know, something like trees or water, it's a renewable resource.
Right.
You know, versus plastic, that's a fossil fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never going to biodegrade, you know, our lifetime. It'll
live
for like a thousand years.
Well,
so
there are
trade-offs. I mean, but everything we do has an impact.
Yeah. Well, they say, you know, it's like styrofoam. You can burn styrofoam, but it still becomes that ball. And they say, back in the 70s and 80s when we were all going through our environmental education, it was 5,000 years for styrofoam to completely biodegrade.
Wow.
That's a long time.
When you guys heard the news that China, as of January this year, and Jackie, maybe you heard about this, and that's why you stopped on the plastic straws, is that China's no longer taking any of the world's plastic. They used to, for like 30 years, they've been taking our recyclables, and they've been processing them, or maybe not processing some of it. But because of the degradation of their environment, because of what they're doing with the plastic out there, they've told the rest of the world, we're not taking any more of your trash. And so essentially now what we're recycling is just getting hoarded until the U.S. figures out what we're going to do with it.
And now if you go down to the port of Los Angeles and you see those big barges, I'll never forget this. My husband and I, we were on a boat and touring the harbor at the port, and there were these giant barges with these giant cubes that, you know, they look like hay bales, but they were much bigger. And I'm looking at it as we're going by, and I'm like, what is that? And my husband told me, he said, that's all of our plastic. That's all our trash that's been compacted and it goes to China. I was like, are you kidding me? I didn't know it until I saw it. Yeah, it has to go someplace.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now China's not accepting it, mm-hmm. we have some new options, and there's lots of environmentally friendly, environmentally sustainable, and entrepreneurially brilliant companies that are taking trash and making things out of it, like building materials. You can make building materials out of plastic and other materials that you mix with it. That is very sustainable. It breathes, and it's very, very good R factor. That is, it has a great thermal resistance factor. And so
well,
there's
going to
be things made out of it.
I think on a real hot day, your house could melt.
No.
They're making clothing out of recyclables.
Yeah, right.
They're making a lot of stuff out of recyclables. But
yep.
I think the point
is
to stop manufacturing the plastic stuff now, and we can just reuse all of what we've created so far. But the plastic thing is bad. You know. I did a coastal cleanup day last year. I went down to the harbor. They were having like a harbor cleanup, and I grabbed my net and my bucket, and I went down to this one corner where some of the docks are, and I'm looking at it, and upon first looking at it, I'm like, oh, that looks pretty clean. But you stand there and you look at it long enough, and there is plastic, mm-hmm. clear plastic floating, covering the ocean surface. I was appalled. Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Dana, mm-hmm. something, does this fall into your, because to me this is environmental, just the carbon footprint in itself with all of the cars on the road. So with our parking issues, with our automobile issues here in Manhattan Beach, and this may be a loaded question, I mean, what do you think the city needs to be doing to solve, or is there a solution, workable solution to solve our parking issues and getting people to carpool and ride share and all of that more and electric bikes?
What you're touching on is our biggest environmental problem, both locally and globally, you know, climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing is in California, you know, we have some of the best laws. I mean, that's part of the big reason why our air is breathable again. You know, I hear from people in the 70s that the smog was so thick in L.A., but look, we change a few of our air pollution laws in the state, and look how much better it gets.
Yeah.
Or when they figured out the ozone hole was, you know, that there was a hole in the ozone, mainly because, you know, they outlawed the product that was really causing that, and the ozone hole has gotten much smaller. You know, so we can fix these problems. We just have to – we can't wait until it gets to a tipping point where it's too late. And I think on that precipice of climate change.
You know, Dana, it's funny. We've had this conversation on the show before about the automobile. You know, that's the biggest offender. But, in 10 years, I think that's going to change dramatically with – I mean, they're already building parking structures that can later be converted
into
other uses, offices,
apartments,
whatever. Yeah, because because the automated car, you know, the self-driving car – you know, I've read quite a bit on this where we already know millennials, a lot of the younger generations are not buying cars, you know, between Uber and shares and stuff like that. But it's probably going to be in our lifetime where these automated cars aren't going to have to park. They're just going to pick people up, drop them off, pick people up, drop them off. They're not going to need to park. So you know, I think we're talking about less cars, less parking issues for cities. You know, I was down at the El Segundo Art Walk last week, and they have installed those the scooter program. They've already installed that. You can all throughout the city, they have these scooter racks where you can, you know, it's like the bike share thing. So I really believe that it's going to happen, and it's going to happen fast. You know, as I said earlier, between my electric bike and Uber, you know, I hardly drive my car anymore. You know, so that's happening, happening fast. It's going to happen in our lifetime, and I think that's going to be a turning point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you guys know the answer. You know, it's, you know, the lowest hanging fruit is just to get the highest miles per gallon when you buy a vehicle. But even mm-hmm. the best thing to do mm-hmm. is really buy electric. And especially mm-hmm. for cities mm-hmm. that where we are in this Clean Power Alliance, where next year the power in Manhattan Beach and Redondo Beach and about 30 other cities across Southern California, we have the opportunity to get our energy as high as 100% renewable. And any individual can actually mm-hmm. opt up. So Manhattan Beach, our council decided to default everybody into the 50% renewable, which mm-hmm. should be about mm-hmm. the same or less than we currently pay on our Edison bills. But it'll be much higher renewable energy.
Dana,
so the more
explain
we elect,
that.
Yeah.
You may want to explain that to these guys and to the listeners, because you got everybody. That's an education. That's something also that we have to let our residents know, because they'll automatically get the 50, but they do have a choice, and they need to be aware of that, because they can choose the 100%.
Sure. That's why it's called community choice energy.
Right.
So before
I
delve into that, the one thing I was going to say is that to reduce our carbon footprint, to have cleaner air, to combat climate change, one of the biggest things we can do is pretty much electrify our homes. So the more we go on to electricity instead of fossil fuels or natural gas, the greener it is. That said, that means we have to make sure that the energy that we are using is as renewable and clean as it can be. So if you're producing energy on your home with solar panels, then it makes complete sense to try to electrify every bit of your home, including your car. So for those that don't have solar panels, or actually beneficial for those that still do, this is not a new idea. It's called community choice energy, or also known as community choice aggregation. There's many throughout the state. In fact, a larger portion of the population in the state are in these. They're called CCAs. But what our city and Redondo did, and Santa Monica, West Hollywood, Culver City, Hawthorne, Rolling Hills Estates, so many across our area, we banded together with the County of LA, County of Ventura, and we formed this, it's a JPA, Joint Powers Authority, called Clean Power Alliance of Southern California. And what this does is it basically cuts out the investor-owned utility for making our power choices. And this board made of all of our cities gets to choose where our power is coming from, like they're doing the power procurement, and then each city gets to choose what percentage renewables does each city's customers get. And so each city was had to decide whether they wanted 33%, 50%, or 100% renewable. And several cities went 100% mm-hmm. renewable for every resident and their cities. So off the top of my head, that was Santa Monica, Culver City, and West Hollywood all are going to default to 100%. Our city of Manhattan Beach City Council decided on 50%, which is great, because our current what everybody's defaulted in with Edison right now is in the high 20%. So that's quite a leap up to getting more clean and renewable energy. Now, when this goes through, everybody's still going to get their bill through Edison. So we still pay Edison. We're still using their power lines and everything. The difference is that there's going to be two notices going out when this starts really, because it's still in, the power and everything's still being procured right now. So every power customer in these cities will get notices by mail, and they can opt up. So if you're going to follow this 50, but you want 100% renewable energy, you can opt up. You can opt down to 33%. You can leave it at the same, or you can opt out and just go back to Edison. And so that's where it's true community choice. It's basically giving all of us as power customers more and cleaner options. And it's a great thing.
All right. The $64,000 question, is it more expensive to do that, or in the long run will it pan out?
Oh, because you're cutting out the investor-owned utility. The 33% and 50% levels are actually it's projections until we're actually doing it, but it's projected to cost less on your bills. However, going up to 100%, it would cost a little more than staying at the status quo with Edison. But the 100% renewable through our Community Choice Energy Program would cost less than if you went 100% through Edison.
Ooh, I can't wait to get my notice.
Well,
Yeah, no, exactly.
We're going to have you, Dana Murray, City of Manhattan Beach Environmental Manager, we're going to have you on regularly.
I think, for all of the
environmental issues going on in the city. We can't wait. Dana, you've been wonderful. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me. And I love your guys' ideas, too.
it's going to be fun. Going forward
I want to know how Chef Jackie
Mark?
Thinks about going electric.
Chef Jackie?
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. I much prefer a gas stove.
But I have my grill.
I have my grill.
Yeah. True.
That's gas too. That's propane.
But that's gas, right?
Yeah.
Dana, is there a good gas? Is there a good gas to use? Because all chefs, grillmeisters, all of that, they still want gas.
You know, this came up. This was at the Green Cities California Summit this week. The whole discussion was electrifying our cities, and myself and Santa Monica and West Hollywood. Because I think because we're in LA, we're like there's a lot of foodies, and so we had to say that you know we could get because it's really. But there's other aspects of natural gas that are much more efficient, easier to get rid of. So heating your water, heating your home, cooling your home, instead of using natural gas for all that, going electric.
Yeah.
Because we push back a little bit on like fire pits, so natural gas fire pits and barbecues and gas ranges, because yes, you know, there is kind of like a quality of life aspect to it. The response we got from some of the experts are like that there's an electric, what do they call it? It's where it doesn't heat. Like as soon as you're done cooking, it's not hot anymore. What is that called?
Is that convection? Is that a convection oven?
Not the oven, but it's like the stovetop. And it's not like a traditional coil. It's not an electric coil. It's just like it heats up while you're cooking and then
induction.
It cools down immediately.
Induction.
Yeah, induction. That's what it
is.
Induction. Yes.
Because it induces heat in metal using magnetics. And then when you turn it off, the heat just dissipates. Induction heating.
So I think that's what they were really pushing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
there's another thing. So there's a lifestyle change. I think chefs are just going to have to learn. My wife is a chef to learn how to cook with that kind of heat, maybe.
It doesn't have to happen at once. Like I said, the things that are immediately better to go electric rather than natural gas. Like I mentioned, like heating our water, drying our clothes.
Right.
You know, heating, cooling our homes. If we go first, those are the low-hanging fruit.
Oh, I got to tell you something. I have been asking my husband for the last 5 years to install a clothesline for me, and he finally did it 2 weeks ago. So no more dryer. No more dryer. No, dryers ruin your clothes is all I'm
saying. I don't want to see that clothesline.
It's on the side of the house. Nobody sees it.
Well, they're
kind
of charming, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think your clothes smell better. They smell better too, but dryers ruin your clothes. So I discovered that many years ago, and I had one of those little foldable accordion things out in the side yard, and I was like, John, would you please install a clothesline for me? He finally did, so no more dryer. So I'm very excited. Well, I think we solved a lot of the world's problems today.
What about tankless water heaters? One last question. What about tankless water heaters? That's gas, right?
Well, I think tankless water heaters are much more efficient than the traditional ones.
Right.
Yeah.
And so look at...
Because they're on demand.
Right. But I think if some people are, if you're retrofitting your home, if you're renovating, if you're a new homeowner, if you need to replace things, to ask the questions about, okay, what is the most efficient? And also they say that the most efficient gas appliance is never as efficient as the most efficient electric.
Right.
So asking those questions and being an aware consumer, I think, is another thing that you can do. Mm-hmm. But yes,
I put in tankless years ago. We put in tankless
about 15 years ago. Yeah, so did we. Yeah. Yeah.
Jackie,
okay,
you're cutting edge.
We're early adopters.
Early adopters. There you go. This has been great.
This has been a great show, and we're at the end of the show. Are there some initiatives, Dana, that residents of the city of Manhattan Beach or generally the South Bay can get involved with? Or how do people find out more about the environmental policies of Manhattan Beach? Websites, whatever.
Okay, so there's three questions there. So the first one, to find out more about what we're doing here in Manhattan Beach, you can go to citymb.info/sustainablemb, and that'll get to you to what we're doing. Second thing, how else people can get involved in the community, and I would say South Bay or even just Los Angeles, Coastal Cleanup Day is coming up this September, and it's the largest volunteer day on the planet. And actually on July 20th at the Manhattan Beach Library, Heal the Bay will be hosting the Coastal Cleanup Day Captain Training. So there's usually over like 40 sites around Los Angeles where they're doing Coastal Cleanup Day. So that's a one-day thing, you know, where people can get involved. If people want to get more deeper involved, you know, talking to your electeds, talking to your city staffers, talking to decision makers about what your environmental values are and asking for those changes in your community. So those are three different tiers.
What about, Dana, is there going to be a public outreach for sustainability, something in overall? Well, actually, this leads to my Healthy Living Expo that I want to do with the city next year. And that's – so, okay, I'll table that question for now.
Okay, we gotta wrap this up. We have to wrap this up, Joe.
We got to have Dana on again.
We have to wrap
this
up.
Yes, we do.
And we will. And thank you very much for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the South Bay Show, our environmental sustainability show on the new MB Chamber 360. Thank you very much. And thank you for joining us, Mark, as always, Mark Lips. And, of course, thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
Wait a minute. You're stealing her line, Mark. All right. That's our show. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Happy Friday.